Welcome to Enid Monthly In Depth, the podcast with Enid people for Enid people. Today we have the new Enid High football coach, Cameron Conder. We talk about where he was raised, where he is coached, and what he's looking forward to in the season, and what made Enid High football a great job for him. Thanks for listening, and here's Coach Conder. All right, this is Robert Falk with Enid Monthly In Depth, and I'm here with Coach Cameron Conder. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing good. Good to have you here today.
Well, good. Good to be here. We're here in Enid Monthly In Depth. We get to know people around Enid and kind of what they've got going on. Obviously, you're the new coach at Enid High School, Plainsman, so the football team. So we really wanted to kind of chat with you about that, how things are going so far at the beginning of practice, and kind of get to know you a little bit. Is that cool with you?
That's great.
All right, man. Hey, so where were you born? Were you born in Enid? Were you born somewhere else?
So I was actually born in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I'm an Army brat. My dad was in the 82nd Airborne. And then soon after I was born, we moved to Phoenix, Arizona. And so I was raised in Phoenix, lived in Phoenix for about 30 years. So.
Okay. So did you play football at Phoenix?
Yep, I played football in Phoenix. Played at Phoenix Christian High School. Interesting story for everybody in Northwest Oklahoma. My backup quarterback in high school is the quarterback's coach for Oklahoma State Cowboys, Tim Rattay. And so we had a mutual relationship, obviously, in high school, friends. And then when he became the quarterback's coach at OSU, you know, obviously we're in close proximity now. And so he played the NFL for the 49ers and the Buccaneers for 11 years. And so that's kind of interesting. And then after Phoenix Christian, I had a lot of opportunities to go play basketball and football in college. Went to Phoenix College to start, and then had some opportunities after that, and it kind of got derailed by injury. So I'm kind of one of those guys that has been for sure, or never was.
Well, you said you went to a Christian school. Was it so? Was it a smaller private school then?
Yeah, it was a medium-sized private school. It's actually the first private school founded in Phoenix, and so obviously, you know, with the growth around Phoenix, it kind of got swallowed up, and so it's definitely decreasing in numbers nowadays, but it was pretty good size at the time.
Okay, and you said you're a quarterback?
Yep.
Okay, so you've got a big offensive background. That's kind of where you come from. Yep. Well, so after you went to, you said you're, where'd you go to college then? Phoenix College, okay. Yep. And then did you play all 4 years until you got injured? Or
actually didn't. And so I wasn't able to get medically cleared my junior year, and so I basically decided that, you know, I was going to go a different direction. So had some coaches reach out to me and actually started coaching high school football, and then coached a little bit of college football back at Phoenix College, and you know, I didn't really know how much I was going to like coaching. You know, when you're that age, you're kind of like, well, I mean, you know, you don't really think that highly of your coaches when you're young. And so my high school head coach had reached out to me and thought that I would be a good fit. And then I kind of just fell in love with it.
Did you start coaching quarterbacks or offense?
I did actually start coaching quarterbacks right from the jump. And the one thing was, is I think that's what made me fall in love with it. We were very explosive on offense. And, you know, had an opportunity to coach with some really good coaches, some Hall of Fame coaches, and you know, when you're coaching with good people and got good minds, you tend to be attracted to that.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do after you, from the place that you were at initially in high school?
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of bounced around, you know, coaching with a couple different guys, just taking different jobs and stuff like that, were a part of, you know, played in 4 state championship games and won 3 in Arizona. And so, you know, with those successes, you know, get better jobs. And then, you know, I actually worked for Coach Rattay, and he kind of mentored me all the way through until about 2006 when I moved to Texas. And started coaching in Texas.
Yeah, what area in Texas were you in?
In Dallas.
Okay. Is that how you made it up to Oklahoma, is from the Texas area?
Yeah.
Have you ever been a head coach before? Is this your first head coaching job?
Yeah, so I actually was a head coach. I was a head coach over in Locust Grove.
Is that 4A or 3A?
Yeah, it's 3A school. And so that was a little bit of a short stint. And, you know, I learned a long time ago that, you know, when you go into a program and maybe your culture isn't gonna fit with what you know, your ideals are and how you want to build a program, you need to probably move on fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty quick exit in Locust Grove because I just didn't feel like we could establish a culture that I wanted to be a part of.
We'll talk about the culture that you like in a minute. So at some point you ended up here at Enid. Coach Woods, did he recruit you to be to come here?
So, you know, it's actually interesting because I came up here with Steve Hayes in 2015, and so I was the offensive coordinator assistant head coach from 2015 to 2018, and then took the job in Locust Grove when Coach Woods got the job here. I really just felt that, you know, Coach Woods needed, you know, a fresh start and needed to get his own people in here. And then when things didn't work out over in Locust Grove, I talked to Mr. Darrow, and Mr. Darrow hooked me up with Coach Woods, and Coach Woods needed some coaches. And so, you know, just kind of picked up a little bit where I left off in Enid. You know, and me and Coach Woods work well together, and so it kind of worked out pretty well.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of people talk about Enid, and it's very difficult to win here because we're in 6A1 and the biggest class with the biggest 16 schools, and a lot of those schools are three times the size of us and that sort of thing. But in conversations I've had with you before, that's not something that really concerns you a whole lot, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it doesn't really concern me. Obviously, it's an issue, but we have to worry about ourselves, number one, and number two, we've proven over the last couple of years that we can compete against the teams that we should be competing against, the Moores, the Westmoores, the Southmoores, the Normans, the Yukons. You know, you gotta kind of earmark some teams that you know that you can beat on your schedule and go after those, and then go compete against the Jenks and the Broken Arrows and the Bixby's and the Owassos of the world, and make your program better. You know, you got to compete first before you can beat somebody. And so I think we're at that point to where, you know, it's about us. And, you know, we don't talk about any of our opponents in practice. It's a big key to us, you know, in terms of the culture that we're building. We got to worry about ourselves.
We'll talk a little bit more about that culture. What's kind of the highlight of what you feel like you need to bring to a team, or you want a team to really buy into?
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer. All the championship teams I've been a part of, either as a player or as a coach, we've always had better effort than our opposition. And so when I took the job, you know, I kind of established this mantra of, you know, Effortville. And people ask me, you know, hey, is that somewhere in Oklahoma? And I'm like, well, Effortville's right here at Selby Stadium. And so we've really sold that to the kids that, you know, if we're going to be successful, We've got to do everything in our power to give the greatest effort each and every day to achieve what, you know, our mind wants, you know, and sometimes, you know, your heart and your mind aren't on the same plane. And so we're building the 18 inches from the heart to the mind and getting our kids to believe in things that, you know, maybe they thought before weren't possible, and pushing them to limits that, you know, they can achieve, but they maybe don't think they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but I've been here about 20 years, and so generally we have a team that's, you know, our best hope is to be kind of 50, you know, 500 or so. But on occasion, we'll pick up a team like Austin Box's team that's got three or four just stud athletes, and then some really good backup, you know, guys that are right behind them that are pretty good. How many of those kind of guys does it take to really challenge to go get to the playoffs and go far in the playoffs?
You know, I mean, I think last year's team was a perfect example of, you know, you need great senior leadership, number one. Number two, you need some kids that really buy into the weight room, buy into what you're doing as a team, and then as a collective group of younger kids and older kids, they go out and they forge their own path, and they believe in what they're going to do is going to mean something to this community. And so, in terms of numbers, you know, it all boils down to leadership at the end of the day. But, you know, you at the 6A level, I think it's different depending on your classification, but at the 6A level, you're going to really need about six or seven kids, maybe eight kids that are just sold out and, you know, potential college football players to compete.
Does it look like that we're kind of in that position right now?
You know, because of the team last year was so senior heavy, we had, you know, 27 seniors, I believe, last year. So when I took over the program, you know, I did an analysis, which obviously I didn't have to go very far because I was a part of I've been a part of the program. But, you know, when you graduate that many seniors and that many kids were playing, you've got to replace some key pieces. You know, we've got a big task ahead of us just to replace the amount of offense that we're losing in Tyke Andrews and Luke Rao. Mm-hmm. You know, 2,000-yard rusher from the backfield. We got to find a way to replace him. And at the receiver spot, a 1,500-yard receiver in Tyke Andrews. We got to find a way to replace him. Now, those aren't easy pieces to replace, and we're gonna replace them with numbers. We're going, instead of having Luke Rao as the sole running back, we're going to use four or five guys to try and replace that. And with Tyke's position, we're going to try and spread the ball around and it not be one key piece. We've got some talent in the receiving core and the running back position. So, but we're young and we're inexperienced.
Well, let's talk about those guys. In the last couple of years, we've had some guys that have gone to big time. Donovan Riemann 2 years ago to Kansas State. Tyke, you just mentioned, went to Oklahoma State. Are there some guys that you're looking at that could have the possibility to make a big time Big 12 program or SEC program?
You know, we've got Carmelo Washington, who's been on a lot of guys' radars this summer, plays receiver. He'll be a junior. We've got Zaire Allen, who's a tremendous basketball player and does a lot of really good things on the football field. Who will also be a junior. Tyson Kennedy be playing some safety. He'll also play some receiver this year. He's very, very explosive from the slot. So we've got three receivers right there that collectively can make up for what we lost with Tyke. At running back, we're gonna have, you know, Blake Fuchsa will get, you know, his shot to shine. He's going to be a junior. We've got Joshua Withey. He'll be a senior. And then Zane Wiggins. He's going to be a junior. And so we've got Clayton Rowland. He's going to be a sophomore. So, you know, all these names that I'm naming, they're all underclassmen. And so, you know, we're kind of building with youth. But when you build with youth, the future looks bright too.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that we're going to spread the ball out a little bit more than maybe you did last year. Mm-hmm. Is that because you don't have a Luke Rao that can just bang it up the middle?
And you know, I think it's kind of my style in the first place. You know, we're gonna play a little bit different brand of football. We're gonna vary our tempos, and so you'll see us play really, really fast at times, and you'll see us slow the ball way down. And there's a little bit of a method to the madness, but. You know, I think we got to be smart in terms of picking our spots to where we play fast. And, you know, you don't really want to play fast when it's 3rd and 12. So, and you definitely don't want to play fast when you're down, you know, multiple scores. So, it's really just kind of just the philosophically where I think we can pick our spots and be an explosive on offense. And obviously not having a Luke Rao that we can just, you know, rely on to be a 25 carry a night guy makes a difference too.
For sure. So what would you say that looking at last year that was kind of even? You ran the ball about the same. It seemed like. I mean, I don't know if the numbers bore that out. You know the numbers more than I would. Yeah, but just
we were about 51-49.
Okay, so it seemed like it was pretty balanced. Yeah. So do you expect that to be pretty similar this year, or what's kind of?
I would probably say we will not be balanced. I think we'll be a little bit more pass heavy, And that really includes the running back catching passes out of the backfield. So those running backs are involved a lot more heavy in the pass game. But with how we have designed our offense, we're trying to alleviate some pressure on our offensive line, and we'll still be really heavy in the RPO game. We'll be very few drop back passes, but we'll definitely throw the ball to the perimeter on some screens and rely heavily on getting our athletes in space.
Sure. I listened to an interview with Coach Gundy earlier this year, and he was talking about how they're going to go under center a lot more this year. I don't know if you heard that or have seen that. And one of their new guy, a transfer that came in, Bowman, that he's spent about half his career under center at Michigan, and the other half was at Texas Tech that were all a shotgun. But he said that it gives that run play action, it gives it a little more oomph, and it gets those linebackers to bite a little bit more. But the problem is, you got your offensive line's got to get another second or two. Is that something that you get concerned at too? Or
we'll be primarily in the gun, and I think that really just has to do with our offensive line kind of trying to help them out a little bit, and what we're doing offensively is just a little bit more effective from the shotgun. We're going to definitely run a lot of different formations of people, and so we're not going to line up in, typical high school football teams are going to line up in about 7 or 8 formations. We got 37 formations on the board in there, and so we're going to try and get people misaligned to our formations and make things easy based on defensive adjustments.
To do that, you have to have a pretty good quarterback. I don't know that you mentioned the quarterback. Who's likely to start this year?
Yeah, so, Aiden Robinson has done a great job this summer. We had Bennett Percival that had some arm trouble in baseball, and so he wasn't able to do much this summer, and really just recently got released to throw. Israel Gonzalez has really come on and shown some flashes of that he can do it if he's called upon. So we got 3 guys. I've had college coaches come in here this spring and summer and like, "Coach, I don't know what you're doing, but you definitely know how to develop quarterbacks because you got 3 that can all do it."
Mm-hmm. So you're not quite exactly sure who's going to be the guy the first day.
I would have to say that, Aiden's getting first team reps right now. Bennett Percival's getting first team reps at tight end. Big target, 6'3", 218 or so. And so, that's what we're looking for right now. And doing some things with 2 quarterbacks in the backfield at the same time. So going to be some exciting things going on.
So you got some options, but you kind of have a general idea. We talked about it being day 3 of practice so far, that you haven't really gotten to hit or get the pads on yet, but y'all are looking forward to that. What's kind of the process through that first game? I believe that y'all are playing, is it Ponca City's the first game?
Yes, yeah, so we've got a scrimmage here on August 17th, and then we open up the following Friday, the August 25th, at Muskogee. Muskogee's a really, really good football team. They will be in the top. If they're not the top team in 6A2 to open up the season, they'll be 2 or 3. Behind Choctaw and possibly Deer Creek, they're all, in my opinion, pretty equal. But so we open up with a really, really good opponent. They've got some really good football players, and so we're preparing our kids for that game already. Kind of like I said earlier, we are way more worried about ourselves than we are anybody else. I think if we get our stuff right, then we'll be fine.
I did notice that was up above here. It's on August 25th. That's the first game. You said it's an away game, and that follows up by the Ponca City game there on September 1st. Mm-hmm. And then the first home game will be September 15th against Edmond North. Is that right?
That will be homecoming.
Okay. So is it pretty common to only have 4 home games? That was something that I'd...
So it was kind of a little bit of an interesting thing that transpired. The Moore schools are going through some stadium builds. And so last year they wanted to move some games around. And so we had 6 home games last year. And so we've got 4 home games this year. And that's really the reason why I was a real big stickler on getting the scrimmage here, so we at least have another experience here in Enid where we our kids get to be here instead of somewhere else.
I think I read that you guys had the off-season program. The 2 things that really stood out to me besides going .500 last year, was it 5-5 last year, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was a real big jump jump for a lot of people. We're excited about. And we're in two or three other games that just certainly could have won.
You throw their playoff games in there. You know, we obviously won a first-round playoff game, and then we lost the second round. So our overall record was 6-6.
6-6. Yeah, so that, I mean, that was really encouraging, obviously. But the two things that I really noticed is number one, the buy-in to the off-season programs, number two, the emphasis on strength and conditioning and weightlifting, which is off-season too, but during the season. Is that something that you're encouraged to continue? And I think I saw that you had 36 guys or something that made
36 guys this summer that were 100% attendees during Summer Pride. It's one thing that, you know, I put a emphasis on is, you know, if you show up, you get better. And so, you know, I'm a big rewards guy. When I took the job, I made it be known that, you know, we're going to reward kids for their successes. And so I made a deal with my players and the athletic department that, you know, if kids were 100% attendance to Summer Pride, they'd get their name on the back of their home jersey. And so, believe it or not, you know, it seems like a small thing to us as adults, but man, the kids have just, you know, taken to that, and they put a premium on showing up to Summer Pride so they can get their name on the back of their jersey. They didn't want to be, it's probably more that they didn't want to be one of the ones that didn't have it. But, you know, and you know, the number is great. But I think what's going to end up happening is next year's when it's really going to be interesting to see how many show up, because they're going to have to experience a Friday night without their name on the back of the jersey. You know, we had great turnout. We had 90 plus every day for the most part. We fell into the 80s a couple days with church camps and stuff like that going on. But to be in the 90s for Summer Pride, this program's never seen that before.
That's massive. And the numbers that just have increased exponentially each year, it seems like. 4 or 5 years ago, I mean, there might have been 20 kids out here during the summer. And there, it certainly wasn't as organized and as for the entire school, not just football, but for the entire school. So that's something that I've really I thought was pretty cool. But who kind of has directed? Was that an athletic director kind of deal? Or was it?
I think everybody, you know, all of us collectively, all the coaches, you know, my experience in Texas was, you know, is invaluable in regards to, you know, what we do in Texas is really the foundation of how I'm building my program. But the emphasis that's put on, you know, summer is out of this world. And so, but all of us as a athletic department came together and have put this thing together to get it going in the right direction and put a premium on kids showing up.
That's really cool. Another thing that I've noticed is that in the last few years, it seems like there's been a real big the administration has been really into making sure that most teams have what they need.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that something that you've seen in football as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing is, you know, I'm kind of a show me guy. You know, we can talk about it all we want, but you know, our administration does it. You know, and you know, right now with the amount of kids that I have in my program right now, we haven't even started school yet, so I can probably count about 16 or 17 kids that I still haven't seen who will be a part of the program. It just so happens that they'll be here day one of school, you know, I'm running out of equipment. I'll be honest with you. I told Dr. Darrell the other day, I said, you know, I'm gonna probably be making a phone call that we're out of equipment, and we're gonna have a contingency plan to how we're gonna suit kids up, because right now, it's looking like we're gonna run out of equipment. I had 80 plus middle schoolers come and get fitted for their equipment on Monday, and so, you know, that's a problem that they want to have. And so it's great when you hear your administration say, when that happens, we would love to pick up the phone and hear that conversation.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit, if you had two or three kids that you're really excited to see how they might progress this year, that just seem like they might be on the cusp of doing something really cool, who would you maybe point out?
You know, I think I'm gonna point out Brady Bierschmidt, number one.
Sophomore.
He's going to be a junior. You know, he's worked extremely hard in the weight room all, you know, all summer.
And he's a transfer in. He came from Texas, right?
He came from Prosper, my neck of the woods, about 7 miles south of where I was. You know, he needs to have a big year for us, and I think he's going to. He's going to play a lot of defense. He'll probably play the majority of snaps on defense. He'll play, you know, probably about 50-60% of the snaps on offense. And so, looking for big things from him. You know, another one is going to be Blake Fuchsa. He's going to need to grow up and give us some oomph in the backfield, and try and fill those shoes that Luke Rowe left. You know, and then obviously, you know, with what we do offensively, we're going to need Aiden Robinson to have a big year. And, you know, he got some experience under his belt last year. He's going to need to lead this football team on and off the field. In my opinion, so goes your quarterback, so goes your team. And so we're gonna put an emphasis on not turning the ball over and making right decisions and pushing the ball down the field. And you know, I think that he's ready. He's a year wiser, a year more mature. And so I think those three guys are kind of telltale signs of kind of what we're trying to build with hard work and effort and attitude. And so, you know, we've got a lot of kids that got a lot of great ability. But I think those three guys, if they show up and they do what I think they can do, it'll be really good for us.
You mentioned the junior high programs or middle school programs that that you're putting some equipment on. What are there three teams now, or are there just two? Or are there still two teams?
There's two. There's okay. Waller has an actual seventh grade team and an eighth grade team, and then the Longfellow and Emerson combined team just has one, and so. You know, the benefits are, you know, they're really starting to pay off. You know, I put an emphasis on the first day that I got the job. I actually had to tell some people I couldn't come to some meetings because I made it a point that, you know, we were going to get boots on the ground in the middle schools. And so in the late winter, early spring, I was at the middle schools every day. And I think it's paying off because we've got to get those programs built up numbers wise, and treat those kids right and have a good experience. And I can see it right now that, you know, I made the right decision to put an emphasis this year on building those middle school programs.
What's the difficulty in building those programs? Is it finding coaches or money, or what is it to be able to make sure that you have enough teams and enough kids out there that are playing?
You know, so number one, I'm taking a page out of a couple of guys I worked for's book that put some really good coaches at the middle school. I took some coaches from here and put them over at Waller. I actually stole some coaches from Longfellow and brought them over and put them on my staff. And so what I want to do is I want all of our coaches throughout the football program to be on a campus in this district. And so right now we've got six coaches at Waller. Four of those coaches are in a classroom at Waller. And when you have those coaches recruiting the hallways, treating kids right, cutting the discipline down, the kids see them every day, developing the relationships, makes a huge difference. And so four of the six at Waller are on campus. I want to be six of the six that's what I want. At Longfellow Emerson, of the five, we've got three of the five that are on campus. And that's never happened in this district before. 13 of my 15 coaches are in a building at the high school. And so, you know, we can impact kids if the kids see us on a daily, but if they don't, and we just show up here at 4 o'clock and the kids don't have a connection with us, it makes it hard. And so, you know, I want it to be 100%, but right now I'm really pleased with, you know, I've been able to help Mr. Liddell and this district out, get some teachers, and that's obviously a bonus for me and for them.
Now, obviously, if you've got a great athlete that shows up in seventh grade to play football, that you can train that kid to be okay if he's an exceptional athlete. But what about for the rest of the kids? I mean, is it like some other sports where, like wrestling? I was a wrestler growing up, and if you didn't start wrestling early, unless you were an exceptional athlete or exceptionally strong or something really exceptional about you, then you've missed out a lot of technique, and you're not going to be an exceptional wrestler. So how does that transfer in football?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that kids start playing young, but at the same time, there's bad habits that are developed depending upon the coaches that they've had as, you know, growing up through the system. And one of my big key points to this program is vertical alignment. And so we're gonna do things from the top all the way down to the bottom that are getting us ready for Friday night. And so we're gonna start training up our youth coaches to do exactly what we're doing here. And I want them to run their program, I want them to have fun, but we're gonna give them the tools to be successful. And that means I'm gonna have to be invested in that youth program. But to answer your question, sometimes it's better that a kid starts in seventh grade or as a freshman. And other times, my own kids started in first grade. Did that help them or hurt them? You know, all my boys played college football or playing college football. And so, you know, I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other. But there's definitely time once kids, you know, if they wait till seventh grade to start playing, there's still time to develop them.
Yeah, okay. Well, and I know we have EGRT as a local youth league. Do they do a pretty good job? I know they have a lot of effort that they do, but they do a pretty good job of those younger kids playing.
Yeah, you know, I think they do a good job. What I would like, you know, to see happen is everybody become a way more big picture instead of small picture. You know, we need to be coaching for the common goal of making these kids successful as high school, middle schoolers, high schoolers, adults. And I would love to see all of our EGRT teams be wearing Plainsman uniforms. It's going to take a lot of work. We've got some people in this community that are willing to put some money behind that. And, you know, Plainsman white, Plainsman blue, Plainsman silver. I mean,
Chisholm kids might not like that.
Yeah, they might not like that very much. But then that's how they get over here.
Yeah, we like that. Well, you know, one thing I've talked about other coaches is that Enid's kind of different in the fact that we've got several high schools that are pretty close to Enid. And so it really seemed like that they took some of the good athletes to those other programs. But over the course of the years, it's really seemed like that hasn't been as big of a factor. Is that still true? That's not that big of a factor as much anymore?
You know, I mean, some people that follow me on Facebook or Twitter will notice some hashtags that I have, you know, exit 194B. We're gonna lock down the athletes in Garfield County. I mean, that's what's gonna happen. You know, I'm doing, you know, camps on Friday nights out here during the spring and summer, and I had kids from all over the area come. I'm gonna tell you, it's going, you know, we're gonna do things other people ain't doing. And, you know, I'm not an active recruiter per se, but I think your program speaks, you know, volumes. And, you know, we're gonna promote kids. Parents want their kids promoted. We're gonna promote our program. You know, if you're proud of your program, you're gonna promote it. And so, you know, we're very active on social media, my coaches, myself, we're active in the community. If you are a 6A football player and you're in Garfield County, you're going to be going to Enid High here in a couple of years.
And not that you're asking them to come here, but just the program itself is going to draw people to it. We have noticed a lot, just briefly about the recruiting aspect, is that, and especially a lot of other sports, but elite athletes and some of the other sports are really getting, when they are transferring for hardship reasons, that there's been a lot of a lot of discussion about the way that those decisions are made. Has that been an issue here very much or not particularly?
Well, it has been. It was an issue for my own son. You know, I mean, You know, I came from Locust Grove, and I still had a dual residency at the time, and my son got denied, and he had to sit out the first three games, and his dad's a coach. I mean, I'm a little bit against, you know, there's spirits of the rule, and then there's the rule. Mm-hmm. And I think where we fall in this area, and this is all the schools included, you know, somebody that moves from a city, okay, they literally have to pick up and move to come here. Well, in Tulsa, they move across the street. They get an apartment next door, and they're eligible. And so, you know, there's a playing field there that, you know, I'm not going to say it's not fair, but it's a different playing field.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's a little bit of a frustration, but, you know, you got to live with it. I tell people all the time, you know what, every day when I show up to work, I know who my team's going to be. Because just as many times as kids don't transfer in here, kids also don't transfer out. And so, you know, I think anybody in their right mind knows in this area that if you want to play at a high level, you probably need to be going to the biggest school in the area. I mean, it's really hard to get recruited these days, but it's even harder when you're playing at a lower classification.
That makes sense. We talked about the culture briefly. Effortville obviously was something that you said is a big deal for you guys. What is your goal in that culture? What do you want that to look like?
You know what? I want when people show up on a Friday night, or if they show up to our practice, that they leave and they say, "Man, those kids play hard." That's what I want. I want my kids when they go to school. You know what? Those kids, they work extremely hard in the classroom. They give effort. They clean up after themselves. They help others. And it's really all inclusive. And you know, people probably think that it's just a football thing. It's a life thing. And so, you know, we've done a great job coaching staff wise. You know, from the culture standpoint of making connections with kids. I really harped on my coaches in the spring, you know, connection equals commitment. And if we don't make the connection with the kids, we can't ask them to be committed. And my coaches have done an absolutely incredible job doing exactly what I coached them to do to build this program the right way. And, you know, we feed our kids daily. I mean, we're getting pallets of food from RSVP weekly. I've got a deep freeze that's been donated. I got a Blackstone grill that's been donated. We got food that's been donated. We got community members writing me checks left and right to feed these kids. And part of that's the connection piece to building our culture.
Yeah, that's really cool. If you had a wish list for the program, you've been around the program for several years, so you kind of know what the ins and outs of, mm-hmm. of the pros and the cons of Enid High football. If you had a wish list of what you know, what would be on it? What are a couple things that'd be on it?
You know, it's a little bit crazy when you ask that question, because you become so accustomed to your environment. Like when I walk in here, I view this as being my field house. Would we all want a brand spanking new field house and a brand new 60-yard indoor facility for this community to you know, be proud of? Sure. The good news is that's in the works. We just need some other pieces to fall into place for that to happen. And so I know my administration is working towards that, and I'm confident it's going to get done here in the next, you know, probably 18 months would be my guess.
That's good. Well, what so you were in Enid, then you left Enid for a year or so, and then you came back. Was it anything about the community? Did you appreciate the community? What brought you back besides just a job?
You know, so there's a little story behind it, but you know, it was, the transition was during COVID, and I when I left Locust Grove, and I'm still friends with the superintendent that he's actually the superintendent at Garber now, Dusty Torrey, who was the superintendent at Locust Grove at the time. You know, I came back to Enid, and it was it just wasn't a good situation. Dusty knew that. We had kept our house here about 4 days into my stint at Locust Grove. I called my wife and said, "Don't sell the house." And she's like, I got you. So she lived here. I had a place over in Claremore, and you know, COVID had happened that spring, and so we, you know, we had come to a mutual agreement in Locust Grove that I wasn't going to be coming back, and so the there was a lot of coaches in the state that were trying to hire me. Well, having a house in Claremore and having a house in Enid, and you know, the Choctaw head coach calling me wanting to be me to be his offensive coordinator, and Edmond North calling me, and Deer Creek wanting me to coach, and none of them really made sense because I had a house here, and my wife loves this community, and my older boys live down in Dallas, and a lot of people thought I would probably be back coaching in Texas, but you know, we're comfortable here, and I think it's more that that I want to see some things through here, and now I get the opportunity.
Talk a little bit about your wife. What's her name?
Shannon Conder.
Uh-huh. And what's she do?
So she actually is a counselor. She's an LPC here in town, and she actually is a school psychologist for Epic Charter Schools.
And you talked about you had some children. Tell me a little bit about them.
Yeah. So my oldest son Cash, he was a played for us in Salina, Texas, and he actually works in sales down in McKinney, Texas right now. He played football at West Texas A&M. Chase Conder played his senior year here in Enid. It was our first year in Enid, and he actually has the tackles in a game record here at Enid High, 26 in a game against Stillwater. It's a lot of tackles. You know, usually you don't want your safety making all the tackles, but he did that. And then Brady, our youngest, played for us last year and graduated, and he's playing football currently at NEO.
Okay, well, cool. Yeah. Well, sounds like a great family. Sounds like we're lucky to have you here in Enid. Do you obviously your goal is always to win the championship? Mm-hmm. Do you have some other sub goals that you guys are looking to meet this year that you'd like to kind of put out there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's. You know, I sit there and say, hey, we're young, we're inexperienced. It's my job to get us experienced. And, you know, that's why we practice. And so our practice is a little bit different because we got to get kids reps. And so, you know, we're gonna go out there and we're gonna play really, really hard. And I think we're going to surprise some people throughout the state. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for us to get clicking because – number one, we're opening up our season with a really good opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to throw some things at them that they're not ready for. We're going to be prepared. We're going to play hard. And so some of those sub goals are, you know, I want to make sure that our kids continue to have fun. Win or lose, that, you know, my coaches treat kids right. Players are still having fun. And when things go bad, it's not the kid's fault, it's my fault, because I'm a leader of this football team. And so players will never be, the finger will never be pointed at the players. It's my job to prepare them, whether they're experienced or not experienced, and you know, continue to get better each and every day and worry about ourselves and keep growing this program from a number standpoint, from a developmental standpoint, from, you know, treating kids right, treating families right, really. You know, I've had some people call me and ask me, you know, coach, you're really putting a premium on feeding kids, and because it's a serious need in this community. It's a serious need throughout America, but this community right here needs people to step up and make it happen. You know, I send players home with backpacks full of food on the weekends, because it's not just all about the players to me. Okay, if I take care of the family too, okay, it's going to go a long way.
That's nice. A lot of teams have a slogan for the year. Have you guys thought of anything like that? Or
yeah, you know, I know the kids. We're going to actually meet next week. We basically haven't come to a conclusion on our slogan. I can tell you, probably the kids will revolve somewhere somehow, some way around effort. And, you know, I know some kids were throwing around all in and stuff like that, but, you know, we're doing the right things. The kids are buying into what we're selling. And so I can tell you that it's going to be something to do with effort, because I mean, when they break out on Effortville every time, I mean, you know, when I came up with that little mantra, I had no idea it was going to stick. I had no idea I'd be making hats. I had no idea I'd be, you know, people coming in here getting shirts and sending shirts to Georgia and New York and Louisiana. And, oh, I mean, I got people wanting shirts everywhere.
Well, that's really neat. Well, I what I'm really looking forward to seeing, like you said, is that effort on the field this year. Just having a group of good kids, even if we're not going to beat Jinx or Broken Arrow or something like that this year. I'd always circle a game or two that I'm looking forward to competing in. Ponca City, of course, this year. We always like to put the whooping on them if we can. But, you know, so in those Edmond schools and Moore schools, like you said, those are our teams that we legitimately can compete with. Well, I'm looking forward to this year. I appreciate the time. And anything we can do, let us know.
Yeah, awesome.